cup. Boom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
That it does. We are in the air everywhere, kicking off the weekend, and we thank you for finding the Fifth Hour podcast, a spinoff of the overnight radio show at Fox, but only available in the podcast world, wherever you get your podcasts. And we thank you for finding us and supporting the podcast. Five stars on the podcast as David Gascon is with me for another weekend here of shenanigans, and it's our Friday conversation podcast, Gascon, where we bring somebody in and just shoot the crapola have a good time.
Now, I forgot to ask you this since everything has passed with the draft, with the schedule being released, and obviously the regular season and playoffs being done with. Do you think ratings will continue to climb on this podcast, or do you think they will plummet because NFL is king? What's your spidey sense say?
So you're saying like the summertime. That's usually the next couple months are when your favorite sports radio personalities normally get out of town, skedaddle out of town because generally the month of June in particular is a pretty bad month for listenership. And plus, people are doing stuff in the summer. I think we'll do okay. I think we have a solid enough base of people that have already subscribed to the podcast. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to grow. So I want to keep growing the numbers here.
Yeah.
What can we do? Maybe send us a message if there's something that we can do that you think would enhance the downloads. We've had some that have done very well. We had the Tim Donaghy interview did very well.
Yeah, it was good.
People love when we talk to criminals. You can't get enough of that. So there's some of that stuff. But this week, let's get right into it. I don't want any small talk here, Gascon, because we are going to the comedy club is what we're doing right now.
We're going dark.
We're going dark. Earl Skakel, a longtime comedian in L.A., and he does voiceover work. He's a cartoon character in the Jellies. He's got his own podcast, The Inappropriate Earl, and he loves stand-up comedy. He was in The Benchwarmers, right? Wasn't he in The Benchwarmers, that iconic sports movie from back in the day? And he's done a bunch of stuff. So I'm excited. Have we had a comedian on? I mean, we've had people pretend to be comedians, but have we had an actual comedian that's been on?
Do you consider Pat O'Brien or Lenny Dykstra comedians?
P.O.B. Well, the fact that P.O.B. said I could stay at his penthouse apartment in Manhattan, where I know there's no way I'm staying at Pat O'Brien's penthouse apartment in Manhattan. Yes, that I think is comedy. But anyway, Earl is here, and excited to talk to Earl. I love comedy. I haven't been to a comedy club in forever, but let's bring in Earl. And Earl, the comedy clubs are back open here in California, finally. They opened up recently there. You've been doing stand-up. You've been back at the club, so at the Comedy Store. What's it been like? Give me the skinny there. What's the vibe been like?
It's been heavenly because, I did a few, I guess you'd say, Zoom or Instagram live comedy shows during the pandemic, and nothing beats doing punchlines, waiting for the four-second lag to kick in to see if people think you're funny. So, just nothing replaces live comedy. And the other night I was at the Comedy Store, and you could literally feel the love from the crowd, even though I'll assume they didn't know who I was. And it's just been awesome to be back and see real people.
Yeah, what's the state of comedy, though, Earl? Every time I flip on the internet, I see that some comedian's in trouble for this, that, or the other thing, or you can't tell a joke about this, and how difficult this is. It's like a landmine field there, trying to do comedy these days, isn't it?
Well, this is all part of my master plan, Ben, is to be the only comic who doesn't get canceled. So I'm in it for the long game. But it is a different era. I grew up with Archie Bunker, has a comedy influence, not so much for what he was saying, but for how he said it and was likable. And, of course, we mentioned my love of Jim Healy who was one of my very first comedy influences in terms of his style. So, you know, I think in regards to recent events that have gotten certain people canceled, you know, it's just a different era. So if you're doing what some would consider anti-Asian jokes in the middle of Stop Asian Hate Month, they better be really, really funny.
Yeah. I always thought comedy clubs were, I hate to use the term space, safe space, because I hate that, but I always thought you went in there and you, you know, whatever happened, it was just you're telling a joke. Like, and if you're on stage, like, what's the big deal? I hate that that's changed, Earl. I hate that even when you're doing a set, because you've been in comedy for a long time. I think most comedians, you know, there's some truth in it, but there's also a lot of bull crap. You're trying to get a laugh, right? So why are people taking this stuff so seriously? It's annoying.
Oh, it's horrible, because we're all on edge in terms of, can I say this, can I say that? But I think you got to read the room, and, you know, it's like during some of the racial issues that we've had this year, you know, either George Floyd or other incidents, like, you can have racial humor, but it better be really, really funny, because that's going to be the only thing that gives you even a little bit of a pass. You know, it's like I was telling my fiance last night about the famous Chevy Chase, Richard Pryor SNL sketch where, you know, Chevy Chase said a pretty aggressive word on network television. But at the end of the day, you know, that sketch was so funny that saved him from, you know, retribution from sponsors and people who would have called him out if it wasn't funny.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen, like, a bunch of the, you know, the old school comics. Guys have been around for forever. Like, Billy Crystal came out and made some comments about this. I think Dave Chappelle did even recently. Jerry Seinfeld have all talked about, like, the state of comedy. And I guess everything goes in you know, ebbs and flows, right? Or life goes in ebbs and flows. Will we ever get back to the, you mentioned Archie Bunker. I mean, I don't think we'll get back to that period, but it seems so extreme these days. Hopefully it'll roll back, yes? I mean, at some point here, and we can get some of that comedy back?
I mean, I don't know if it'll ever go back to the way, like you said, Archie Bunker was. Some people may say that would be a step back. but, you know, I grew up with the Dean Martin roast where, you know, I think the difference between those roasts and maybe some of the roast-style humor that goes on today is that, you know, Don Rickles could look at Sammy Davis or Nipsey Russell and say something pretty racially insensitive, you know, looking back now. But they loved each other. They were best friends. So there was love behind the joke. Whereas now I think some of the comics who get in trouble for what they say, there's no love behind the joke. It's just, I want to say something shocking, and hopefully enough of the audience likes it where I don't get canceled. So, you know, I think that's the, you know, you look at some of the Comedy Central roast. I thought the Justin Bieber roast was funny because you had Hannibal Buress on it, who is the comic who really got Bill Cosby thrown into the crosshairs. And he just looked at Justin Bieber and said something to the effect of, I don't like your music. I'm just here because I know it'll help me. I think that's what made the Dean Martin roast so great was they were all friends. And now it's just, let me say something shocking and hopefully it sticks.
Yeah. Well, and also getting clout on social media, right? You got to get the buzz going on social media, which is annoying. But I want to go back to Jim Healy because the tape is a rolling here. And Gascon's annoyed because there's a bond. You know, when I run into someone, Earl, that is a fellow Jim Healy fanatic from back in the day, L.A. radio guy, for those around the country that don't know who the hell Jim Healy was, he did a show every day for half an hour in L.A., and it was awesome. It was ahead of his time. But I love that. Or, I mean, Jim, to put in perspective, can you explain in your, you know, you're very creative, obviously. For those that don't know who Jim Healy was, how would you describe Jim Healy in just a couple of sentences?
It's so hard because I would say Jim Healy was a one-man variety show. He was, you know, if you ever listened to the Matt Drudge radio show, it was very similar where Jim Healy had hundreds of, I like to call moles. So he knew the bartender at the Bel Air Hotel. He knew the valet at, Jimmy's in Beverly Hills. And so if, I'm just going to say Steve Garvey. Let's say Steve Garvey was out with a woman who wasn't named Cindy Garvey, his wife. Jim would do a report on it, like a kind of a Walter Winchell type news report with sound clips. Or, you know, probably the most famous clip he had is when I forget the sports reporter's name, Paul Holden.
Paul,
I think
Paul Holden. Yeah, he's the PA guy at Yankee Stadium now, Paul.
Dave Kingman had just hit 3 home runs, drove in 9 RBIs, and I think we all know Tommy Lasorda, when the Dodgers lost, wasn't in the best of moods, and Paul Holden asked the most simple question in the most understated way, what's your opinion of Kingman's performance? And for the next 7 minutes, Tommy Lasorda gave his opinion. 80% of it couldn't be aired on radio because it was beeped. And Jim Healy would beep it just enough so you could understand what words Tommy was saying. And he was a one-man show, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. He wrote it. He, you know, directed what clips would go where, and it's just a brilliant comedy mind. So that's why a lot of people don't understand he was a comedy influence on me versus, say, a stand-up. He was just, you know, it's been 1994 he passed, I think, and 5:30 has never been the same for me, and 6 o'clock when we all would hear the dreaded 6 o'clock tone. Yeah.
The dreaded 6 o'clock tone, and he was an influence on me too. So I mean, we're close to the same age, and I have fond memories. I was telling you off before we started rolling on this, like when I started going to Dodger games and stuff. When I got in the media, I was a young guy. I was like 19, and I had listened to Healy, and I saw all these people that Healy would goof on, like do updates on the freeloading and stuff. And I'd laugh my ass off. But yeah, he knew everyone. I mean, that's a great point about how the people behind the scenes. And that was in the days. It was a Stone Age before social media, and also the technical stuff on how to play all the sound bites that he did his own sound bites, and he didn't have all the computers and stuff that we have today. So it was a much different time, and it's really hard to recreate that. And I try to give tribute sometimes late at night, or I'll try to give tribute to Jim Healy, but you can't. I mean, that's such a unique show. You can't really. The sequel will not be the equal. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, and that's why I was a fan of yours, because when I first started listening to you on Sunday nights, you know, after Drudge, I was like, I know this guy was a Healy fan, because it was, you weren't copying him, but it was definitely a tribute, much like, you know, a lot of people, when they hear my comedy, you know, they'll compare me to Robert Schimmel or Stephen Wright, and I'm not copying them, I just was influenced by them, and he was just such a creative mind, and so funny to me that his dry sense of humor and just the work you knew he put in of calling every source he had before a show, and his out-and-out hatred of Tommy Lasorda, the guy from San Diego, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. I mean, he would berate these guys out in the open, and I like that kind of honesty. Like, I don't know if you have enemies, Ben, in radio, but, you know, if you do, you don't really let it be known. He did, so I like that kind of aggressive humor of naming names instead of hiding behind anonymous zingers.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Earl, this day has gotten off to a bad start. I need to correct some things on this podcast.
No. You don't need to correct anything.
Like, just rose
petals. This is going well. No, this is great. This is a wonderful. Why didn't we get Earl on sooner, Gascon? It's a bad bad job by you.
It's like two men at the beach right now.
You put all these hacks on, and you could have put Earl on, who's a quality L.A. comedian who knows everybody in the business, and you don't put this guy on. Bad job by you.
It's funny, though. The last time I did see Earl was at the Comedy Store pre-pandemic, and Earl, you were judging one of the roast battles. I don't know if many people know about the dynamics of it, but you need to explain that for the audience. And then also, too, we were sitting next to Justin Turner and Dennis Rodman, who, well, I don't know what he was on, but I've never seen a celebrity point blank get escorted out of the building like he did that night. What got you involved in the roast battle, first of all, especially upstairs in that Comedy Store?
Well, I'm no longer involved in roast battle. I feel like Sid Vicious when he left the Four Horsemen and got kicked out by Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Tully Blanchard. But, you know, roast battle was a show. You talk about, you know, aggressive humor. It was basically a one-on-one insult show, and I was one of the founding fathers of it. It was a show that's quite popular back in the day, and I remember that show you were at. I felt so bad at some of the things I said because I was, you know, doing an Archie Bunker type character that I had to apologize to Justin Turner downstairs. I'm like, hey man, I was just kidding around up there. He's like, oh man, you were my favorite part. And then Dennis Rodman got upset at me when I called him Ron Artest. I think Dennis might have been on the powdered supplements, if you know what I'm saying. He sat in my lap that night, and I've never been so turned on in my life. No, I'm just kidding. Because I'm a wrestling fan, so I'm like, hey, you were great in the NWO. Just kidding. I know the NWO was going downhill when him and Virgil were in it, but, you know, it's, I guess it's a roast battle. You'd call it an ensemble roast. It's you know, the show's not for everyone, but it was fun when I was in it. But after I left it was like Kiss with Vinnie Vincent in it, just not the same. How's that for a reference?
Oh man, this, I mean, because I remember back in the day, obviously, with like Jeffrey Ross and some of these cats, and you see it from afar, but then you're point blank and you're in it. I had a buddy of mine that performed that night, and I think he was one of the first two guys, and he got absolutely decimated. And I don't know if it was because of the audience or if it was because his dumbass brought four of his friends, including me, there, and we just heckled the shit out of him the entire time, and he flamed out, like, right before our eyes.
Well, it's, you know, the show's not for everyone in terms of contestants. You know, you have to have a thick skin. You know, you're going to hear, you know, like when I did it on TV against Jimmy Carr, who's probably like the number one comic in the world. I mean, he plays like arenas. He opens up for the Killers. You know, I knew he was going to have jokes about my parents dying 2 months apart and, you know, some of my, you know, bad relationships. And he knew I was going to make fun of his dad and his relationship. So it's blood sport. It's literally like the octagon. You go in knowing what it is, and, you know, if you're strong enough to survive, great. If not, you're going to have a Jerry Springer moment for everyone to enjoy.
But it's allowed you to pivot, though, to a bunch of different things, right? Like Comedy Central, you've been doing voiceover stuff. Like, you're in a lot of different things, aren't you?
Yeah, like right now I'm on a cartoon made by Tyler, the Creator. It's called The Jellies. And I'm the only white guy on it, so yeah, I play the dad. You know, that's probably the thing I'm most proudest of, because he's an amazing, he's a kid, you know, he's in his mid-20s, but he's incredible with his creative vision, and it's kind of like the Black South Park, you know, if you like edgier humor, I think people would like it. And
so how's that work, Earl, when you're the voice of a, that's cool. I love cartoons and stuff, but you know, how much work is that? Is that as easy as it could be, or is there actually some difficulty in voicing over a cartoon character?
Well, for me, it's easy because, as you can tell, Ben, my voice is very monotone. There's not a lot of level to it. So I'm not asked to do any other type of voice other than Earl, just talk and read the line, and we're good. Whereas the guy who plays my son in the show Phil Lamar, and he's like the Wayne Gretzky of voice actors. Like, he's been in everything from Pulp Fiction to, you know, any cartoon or animated movie you've ever watched, he's been in it. He can do like seven different voices, seven different vocal ranges. He's like, watching him was like, and having to do scenes with him in the booth was like doing scenes with De Niro. It was like, wow, this is an education. So, but I love it. You know, it's, I'm like a, let me see, let me think of a good sports analogy. I'm like, you know, I'm like akin to Colvy. I've got the sidearm. I can't pitch any other way. So, you know, if you need a deep baritone growling voice, I'm the guy.
Fair enough. Nate, so you're not, I know that you're a near and dear a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so you're not like a Le'Veon Bell type. You should have listened to Ben's show the other night. It was nauseating. He went through a television schedule for his opening monologue.
Yeah.
Five months.
The most popular television show in America that kills the ratings. And by the way, and you know this, Earl, you know, and you just, when I do sports radio, the number one thing is the NFL. Anything. You know, if Roger Goodell takes a dump, we can talk about it for, you know, 15 minutes if we have to. And Gascon's busting my balls because the schedule came out and I played the hits and I got in trouble for it with Gascon. His instincts. Oh, how bad are his instincts?
I'm a huge hockey guy. Hockey's my favorite sport, a country mile next to football. But, you know, football's just, you know, it's just America's, I think it's America's pastime. I know they say that about baseball, but, like, you know, everyone watches football. Like, you know, you got to put a gun to people's head to watch hockey. you know, hockey's more of a life. Hockey's like Kiss. You know, you put on a Kiss record, any of them, and you're like, okay, this is okay, I guess. But you go see Kiss live, you're like, this is the greatest band ever. And I think that's like hockey. Football is just made for TV. And, you know, even though I totally agree with Jim Irsay, like, who the hell is Mel Kiper? You know, I'll watch Mel Kiper for 6 hours last weekend. Yeah. You know, I am a Steeler fan. But, man, we got a tough schedule this year, that's for sure.
See, that guy, he wants to break down the Steelers' schedule.
Listen,
see what Earl's, see?
This is like,
see, you're completely wrong.
This is
you
an
thought
awful
Earl
day.
Was going to come out and bring the anvil on my head, and he
would have been nice if he did. That would have been nice.
I like the fact. Yeah.
I would love to talk about the White Shadow for the next hour, but, you know, football, the kids today, and I know Ben and Dave, you have a young fan base, you know, they don't know what the hell the White Shadow is, so they want to talk about, you know, Najee Harris and, I don't know, Chad Johnson's TikTok videos.
Yeah, very important. Are you on TikTok, Earl? I'm too old, I think, for TikTok. I'm not on there.
I mean, I'm probably the oldest guy on TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm 52. I feel creepy being on it, to be honest with you. I get messages from, like, 13-year-old Guatemalan boys saying how funny I am. No, I'm serious. Like, my fiance, she's got like 200,000 followers on TikTok. I've got like 1,200, and most of them, I think, have played for the Dominican Republic Little League team.
And see, Earl, that's so funny because you get those emails from those teenagers. Ben gets those from like 67-year-old men. I mean, it's like, it's amazing how these guys, like, how their mouths watering at everything.
You're so jealous.
It's just unbelievable.
See, Earl, you know, he's got ageism. He hates, you know, anybody over a certain age, and Gascon spits loogies in their face. He's like, you get past a certain age. But some of the greatest callers I've had in radio, I got this guy, Doc Mike, Earl, that calls me from Chicago. And he preaches. He calls me like three times a week and preaches that you need to drink your own urine and that you'll live forever and all this. And Gascon, like if it was Gascon in charge, he wouldn't be able to take a call like that. And he's actually, when he's produced my show, Earl, he's not allowed me to take any phone calls because he didn't know how to use the phone system. Can you believe that?
I mean, listen, as a 52-year-old comic who has a primarily young fan base, I'll take anyone's DMs. Of course, you know, you need fans, man.
Whether you're
you guys or me. You know, I can't tell jokes to empty seats. You know, I had a DM just this morning from a 75-year-old woman who made Mother Teresa look like a Backstreet Boy. You know, she said, "I love your podcast. I released yesterday of this hockey player I interviewed." And I was like, "Hey, thanks for." I get back to everyone, you know, because I know when I've reached out to some of my, you know, people I'm fans of, like the singer from Bowling for Soup, he messages me back every time. The singer from Rat, "Hey, will you come on my podcast?" He's come on twice. So I know how good that made me feel. So I get back to everyone, whether you're, no matter what your age is. Of course, you know, if you're anyone under 18, I try not to talk to, boy or girl, just because, you know, nothing good's going to come out of that conversation except allegations.
Earl, one of your biggest interviews was before he passed away, the late, great Roddy Piper. What was that relationship like? How did you two come in contact, and what was the conversation like?
It was awesome, and I owe it all due to the Comedy Store and a fellow comic, Steve Simone. I think he somehow knew Roddy, and Roddy wanted to not necessarily be a stand-up, but you know, at this time, Roddy was probably 55, you know, pro wrestlers, as we all know, they live a brutal lifestyle. You know, it's like when you see Ric Flair still wrestling, you know, he's got to pay off for the 4 divorces and all that stuff. And I think Roddy just didn't want to travel as much anymore, so he thought, "Oh, I'll go to the Comedy Store, maybe have some shows." And one night I'm on stage, and it was pretty empty in the room. How empty was it? Think Dawkins at a state fair in 2021, empty. And I was very upset at how my favorite wrestler, Sting, was treated when he went to the WWE. And I did about a 20-minute set on it, and Roddy was in the background, and he just comes up to me, and it was like talking to Superman. I mean, this is a guy I watched since I was a kid, and he's like, "Why don't you come on my podcast tomorrow? You seem like you're pretty bitter about pro wrestling's state of, you know, the state of it." And it went so well the next day that his producer was like, "Hey, you know, Roddy needs a sidekick, and would you want to do it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't even want to get paid." And so I did it for probably about the last 5 months of his life, and it was awesome. Like, he was, like, getting to work with him was, like, you know, pro wrestlers are, like, especially in the 80s, you know, like Ben said, now there's the internet and YouTube and all that stuff, but, you know, if you watch wrestling in the 80s, you really thought Kamala was from Uganda.
Yeah, exactly.
I swear to God, until my dad once took me to the Olympic Auditorium, which is now a Korean church off the 5, and it's also where Jim Healy did announcing for boxing. He takes me to the WWF event at the time, and my dad leaves me alone backstage in a WWF locker area. That probably speaks to his parenting ability. And I see Kamala putting his clothes on, like khaki pants, a polo shirt. He's still got his face makeup on, and I'm just staring at him. Now, he was about 6'7", 400 pounds. Toward the end of his life, he was about 5'4". But shout out to the WWE for taking care of their own. And he just looks at me and goes, "Hi, I'm Jim." I'm like, "No, your name's Kamala, and what are you doing speaking English?" And no, it was just like, and then Kim Chi came over, who was his manager, you know, the guy who would dress up in the beekeeper outfit. And he's like, "Hey, I'm Steve." I'm like, "I thought you were Asian, and your name was Kim Chi." And you know, it's like when I met Abdullah the Butcher, and he introduced himself as Larry from Windsor, Ontario. I'm like, "I thought you were from the Sudan." You know, I just was fascinated with Roddy's era of wrestling, and he loved that. And,
yeah.
You know, I didn't really care about working for the WWE, and I think Roddy sensed that. He's like, "Okay, he can be the bad guy, and I can just almost be the good guy to this guy's bad guy." And I know the fans hated me on the show. You know, they just wanted to hear Roddy, but, you know, Roddy liked me, and, you know, I cried a lot, you know, when he passed, because he was just a great guy. So yeah, I think about him a lot.
Yeah, legend. I remember when I was a kid, I had the same. I was just like you. You watch wrestling on the weekend, and you're, you know, the come on to the Anaheim Convention Center. It'll be Hulk Hogan and whatever. And you're like, oh, this is cool. And I went out there. I didn't have the access, but I would hang out. I knew where the wrestlers. I went. Actually, it was actually. I grew up in Orange County, so it was the Anaheim Convention Center, this dumpy arena, which is, I don't even know if it's still there. It probably is. But the Clippers actually played a playoff game there during the LA riots back many years ago. So I'm at the Anaheim Convention Center, and I got fat, Earl, on those WWF ice cream bars. I remember those. I got those.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, those were great ice cream bars. And I had the Hulk Hogan vitamins. I took those. And then I learned as an adult Hulk took other vitamins, but I didn't realize at the time. But I was most excited about, because I thought I was going to be a broadcaster even as a kid, Mean Gene Okerlund. Like when I saw him walk out in a jumpsuit, you know, to his hotel, he was walking across the street to the hotel. I was like, oh my God, this guy. And he's like this little bald guy with a, he had a sweatsuit on, and it was awesome. And Andre the Giant, bigger than life, Andre the Giant. I mean, just insane. Who were your, in 1980s wrestling, who were your, like your top three guys, if you, not that we do list radio or podcasting, but who were your top three back in those days?
I mean, definitely the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, he just, his intros made zero, or his promos made zero sense, but, you know, I just, you know, this is the 80s, you know, he looked like Bon Jovi on HGH. Kamala, I just was, before they turned him into a cartoon character, like, Kamala, his first few years as a bad guy was frightening. I mean, you know, when he would come down to the ring and, you know, pound his belly and look like he was an absolute maniac, they would pan to the crowd and show kids crying. Like, they really thought this guy was going to lunge into the crowd and spear them to death. And, of course, the late great, of course, they're almost all dead now. What a health plan they have. The great Rick Rude.
Yeah, solid. Solid.
Which is who I kind of based my roast battle character on. Like, he was just the ultimate bad guy and, you know, would call the audience fat tax cheats, and they loved it. So who were your favorite, Benny? I'm sensing you as a maybe a Earthquake and Tugboat fan.
Natural disasters.
Yeah. No, well, I you know, remember the you know, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, the Junkyard Dog. I liked the Junkyard Dog a lot. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was big. King Kong Bundy. I actually met, yeah, he's, I think he passed away too, George the Animal Steel.
Oh, man.
Which
no,
was
he's
wild.
Still alive.
Is he still alive? Okay, I didn't. George the Animal Steel, when I was early in the radio, I had a similar experience to you. So I got hired to be a celebrity manager for the Head Shrinkers at a WWE event at a minor league ballpark out in the, where was that? God, I don't even remember where it was. I think it was out in the Inland Empire. So we went out there, and I didn't know who was on the card or whatever, but George the Animal Steel was like the big name. It was, you know, it was like a secondary WWE card. And so we got to hang out in the locker room waiting because we were going on like next to, you know, next to last or whatever. And I remember George walked in, and he was like an educated guy, and, you know, he wasn't in character, and he was like a normal dude. And it was like, whoa. And I was flashing back to my youth, and I was like, wait a minute. This is the guy that eats turnbuckles, George the Animal Steel. What's going on with that? And it was crazy. But yeah, I mean, I would say late, you know, late 80s more than mid 80s, but Georgie, I all the dolls too, all the cheesy toys they came out with back in those days. I still have some of them somewhere buried in the.
I've got all my wrestling dolls, and you know, I've been doing comedy for like 20 years. You'd think some of my highlights would have been meeting Jim Carrey on the set of I'm Dying Up Here, or being on a cartoon on Adult Swim, which, you know, you have voice actors who do it for 30 years who never get on a Adult Swim show. But my career highlight is one day I get a package at the Comedy Store, and I go down there and I open it up, and some fan had sent me an Abdullah the Butcher mint condition doll that I'd never taken out of the box. And you would have thought I got the couch on the Tonight Show with how I reacted.
That's great. That is outstanding.
Earl, I got, because you've mentioned so many things, I'm curious, what is the, because you've done a lot, what's the ultimate goal now, or what is the next, besides getting married? You're taking that plunge, you've bended the knee.
You're getting married, you have mazel tov, congratulations.
That's awesome. Yeah, L'chaim.
L'chaim, yes.
What's the end goal now? Like, what do you...
Well, you know, just to have a bigger fan base and, just to, like, I love doing stand-up. And, you know, every meeting I have with a manager or an agent, they all look at me when I tell them that. And it's like, dude, there's no money in stand-up. You know, you got to have a cartoon. You got to have a script. You got to have this, that. You know, I love doing my podcast, you know, to... It's kind of awesome to have some of the guests I've been able to get. Like, I had the bad guy from Superman 2 on. He came to my house. And not Terrence Stamp, but Nom, the guy who didn't speak.
The guy didn't speak at all?
I thought, Ben, I was like, this guy, probably no one's asked him to be interviewed in quite some time. And I somehow got a hold of him on social media. And he's like, oh, can we Skype? I'm like, no, I don't do Skype. He's like, can we Zoom? I'm like, no, you got to come to my house. And, you know, I get a buzz on my door one day, and there's Nom. He's still a huge guy. He's probably in his 70s. And I had no idea of his background. He used to be a heavyweight boxer. He fought George Foreman, and he was scheduled to fight Muhammad Ali. So we had a great conversation about boxing. I mean, anytime I can do an interview and drop Ron Lyle and Tex Cobb and the guy knows who they are, that's a good interview. So, you know, as far as my, to answer your question, Dave, maybe to get on this show more often now that me and Ben are homies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, clearly, I mean, you got to have higher standards than that, though.
I need to.
You got to, you know, I'm a struggling overnight radio guy, so you got to find... maybe you can just move to Austin. Isn't that what everyone's doing now? Moving to Austin and you know, open a comedy club or something like that, I guess. Isn't that the wave of the future?
Well, I think Bill Burr said it the best, and I want to give him full credit. He's like, everyone can move to Austin, but only one of you has $100 million. So, you know.
Yeah, I saw Joe Rogan's house. Holy shit. My God. Man, oh, man. Good for him, but that is... That is insane.
Well, he's got houses. But I messed up, though. Joe asked me once to be on his podcast. You know, he came up to me at the Comedy Store one night. It was really late. It's in the back of the kitchen where is one of his safe spaces. And he just looks at me and goes, bro, it's time you come on the podcast. And, like, Mike, I wish I had my internal dialogue on tape because it's like, okay, don't get too excited. Be cool. And he's like, here's my number. Call Jamie tomorrow. We'll set it up. And I'm like, I'm in. Like, I'm finally in. And I know I would have a good interview with him because, you know, just he's a great interviewer. He's like Howard Stern. He doesn't get the credit for asking the questions nobody else would. And I thought, well, you know what? Everyone calls him the day after. I'm going to give him 2 days. And then second day came, I was like, I'm going to give him one more day so I don't seem too eager. So I called him up, and I could tell he probably forgot he gave me his number to do the podcast, so I just panicked. And I think I asked him about my torn ACL, and he was nice, but it was a short conversation.
Oh, man.
I messed up being nice. Like, that's... Dave, you asked me my end goal is to stop being so nice.
Well, you could still be nice to us, at least. I mean, I need to probably invest in a blanket and a couple wine glasses for you and Ben. Maybe a couch somewhere you guys can do some wine tasting in Malibu together since this bromance has taken off. But,
yeah. Well, set it up, and we'll watch episode 16, season 2 of The White Shadow. I always try and expose this episode to everyone, and that's when Coach Reeves takes Salami, Coolidge, and Thorpe to the golf course. And it is... No, I'm telling you, as someone who grew up playing Bel Air Country Club... and maybe it's inside jokes to me, but that is the finest written hour. Not that The White Shadow was a sitcom, but I guess you'd call it half sitcom, half drama. But it the jokes are so funny, and keeping in mind that they were told in 1979 on Channel 2, Monday night's prime time, that's probably my favorite episode of all time of any TV show.
Rewind the clock.
So, Earl, let's promote you, Earl. I mean, there's probably some people I would think that might not know who you are. Maybe you're being exposed to, and they love you, Earl. They love that you're a sports fan and you're a comedian. You know everyone, and you go to the Comedy Store. And how can people find you, and how can they follow you and say amazing things about you on social media and all that other? You're on the Jellies, you mentioned. You got your own podcast. Was it Inappropriate Earl? Is that the name of it? Am I right on that? Is that?
Yes, you are right, Ben. It's just Inappropriate Earl, and people ask me all the time, as I'm sure they do you guys, what's your show about, your podcast or radio show? And I'm like, it's really the podcast that's about everything and nothing at the same time. You know,
Yes.
For sure. Yeah, if that makes any sense. Like, I had the bad guy from Superman 2 yesterday. I had the very famous, I should say infamous, NHL enforcer from the 80s, Eddie Boxcar Hospodar. You know, nice. I've had. Well, to me, it was him. He meant a lot to me as a kid, you know, because he was he played in the aggressive era of the league, and he was involved in several on ice incidents that are still talked about to this day. He caused a pregame brawl in the '87 Stanley Cup Final warmups. So you can watch, or you can listen to Inappropriate Earl on the Apple Podcast, and on social media, TikTok included. I'm the same on every format. It's just at Earl Skakel, E-A-R-L-S-K-A-K-E-L, and I'm at the Comedy Store tonight, Improv tomorrow. If you message me on, say, Instagram, I can arrange tickets, and, you know, I'd love to poach some of your fans. And to my fans who will listen to this, follow Dave Gascon, follow the great Ben Mahler, a Jim Healy protege, and we all win.
It's a win! All right. Thank you, Earl.
No, Ben, thank you. Thank you for entertaining me. You were an influence on me, so I appreciate that. Thank you, Dave, for setting this up. And if you guys ever have 20 guests that drop out, I'm the go-to guy. I'm the man. It's the old saying in life, guys. You like to hear someone's doing pretty good, but you don't want to hear they're doing better than you. And my whole life, I've done better than all of you. Ric Flair, Starrcade, 1987, Sting.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.